criminal law. We are now in session. The agenda that was posted showed 8:30, but I announced on the floor yesterday that we were moving it to 9 o'clock. Folks not aware of that, I apologize. With the posting system, sometimes those changes don't get noted. Of course, we don't move the time up. We can move it back sometimes. And yes, some folks have anticipated that Representative Al King is going to be called up first, as I told him, on Senate Bill 482. Before we get into that, I will mention for anyone that is here on the laser pointer bill, Senate Bill 848, the requested amendments have not been returned yet. So if you're here only for that bill, you will find that we will not get to it. We will set it for next week. It's a Senate bill, so we're in good shape. But we had two sets of amendments and possibly a third set of amendments coming in, and we'll hold that over until next week. We do anticipate getting to the other things on the agenda, although session is at 10 o'clock this morning. With that, I will convene a public hearing on Senate Bill 482 and ask counsel to summarize the measure as it is today.
Mr. Chairman, the crime of harassment in most cases is a Class B misdemeanor. There is one exception to that under current law. If a person commits harassment by subjecting another person to offensive physical contact, which consisted of touching the sexual or other intimate parts of the other person, it is a Class A misdemeanor, but that is the only exception for the Class B misdemeanor rule for harassment. One of the things this bill would do is to provide that if the other person was a sports official and then not the sexual or intimate part occurred, but rather the offensive physical contact of harassment occurred, then that would also be a Class A misdemeanor. The other thing that this bill does is to create a liquidated damage award of $1,000 for a sports official that is subjected to the crime of harassment, offensive physical contact, during a sporting event.
Very well. Representative Al King, good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And I see that you are in not in muff tie, but in uniform this morning, and I'll ask you to introduce your distinguished panel, or have them introduce themselves as you wish.
For the record, Al King, representative from House District 44, and as they present, I would want them to introduce themselves. I have provided written testimony, which I think that you may get a chance to look over in the interest of time on behalf of the committee. I'll just make a few short remarks that here with me are representatives from OSAA and soccer officials, and if you wish to spend more time on testimony, I think you'll hear some of the most compelling testimony you would hear in the entire session. When the Senate was hearing this bill, the big question was, do we really need this? And very shortly into the testimony, they were on the edge of their seats, and this is very compelling. The current status would be that if someone hit the official and someone called the police chief, probably there would be no officer dispatched. It would be, a routine event. And I would submit to you that assaulting an official is far more than a routine event. The event cannot be safe without a certified official there. Those events would not be happening if we did not have someone who was there for the safety of all the people. This subject was on a feature event on 2020. It generated tremendous concern. It was just last week the subject of a two-hour talk show in Portland. It does have substantial interest. There is just something about going to the kids' sporting match where normally sane adults, upstanding members of the community, can turn into just a different kind of person and go berserk, at that sporting event. And those things can escalate to where a referee is assaulted. And one of the most important things we can do in the game is to teach the kids that they're there, to have a good time and to learn how to become better people. And part of that then means we need to have the coaches respect that tradition, to have the parents and fans respect that. And any part of that equation that goes out of balance starts generating a series of events that can lead to some very serious negative events. So it did pass out of the Senate. Your opposite committee unanimously, I believe it passed off the Senate floor unanimously. This is a very good bill. And I can assure you that if the police officer comes to the field because a referee was assaulted for years in that community afterward, people will be aware that that event occurred and that that was not okay, and it sends that message out saying we need to keep ourselves, you know, under control at these events.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, gentlemen. Representative King, is that not assault and all the other charges that we currently have on the book, whether or not you're in a referee uniform or not?
Well, having the responsibility for the game and the rules of the game, the conduct of the play, is a lot more, than two people, out in a parking lot, getting mad at each other. There's just a lot more responsibility and authority, that needs to take place there. If there isn't some protection, there was a playoff football game. This decided who went to the Super Bowl. There was a very controversial play, and there were, I don't know how many officials are at a Super Bowl.
Seven
officials. And so the head referee, when he went over the sidelines for conferring, he wasn't asking what happened in this game. He asked, how many police officers do you have to protect me at this game? And he said, well, we have 8. Touchdown. He was not going to put himself in danger of that crowd. We're asking those officials to go out by themselves and face very serious crowds at some time. And just because there's not 2,000 or 100,000 people a game doesn't mean when you have 200 people at a soccer match that's not a lot of people.
Let me ask you a question about
that's a lot.
The crime of harassment that's dealt with in this bill, and this is so everybody can think about this. A person commits the crime of harassment if the person intentionally, then we have subsections, harasses or annoys another person by, I forget the offensive physical contact, I'm talking about the boisterous so-called fan in the stands. Publicly insulting such other person by abusive words or gestures in a manner intended and likely to provoke a violent response. Problem there being, of course, it's not likely to provoke a violent response from the sports official who's better trained and better behaved. They're not likely to respond to this so-called fan who's using abusive words. Or we go into subsection B, subjects another to alarm by conveying a false report. Well, that doesn't do us any good. Or subsection C, subjects another to alarm by conveying a telephonic or written threat. Well, that doesn't cover it either. What I'm getting at is I'm looking at harassment in terms of the definition, because you add sports officials here and then you make it a higher level offense for sports officials. I wonder if a prosecutor could ever get a conviction for publicly insulting such other person by abusive words or gestures in a manner intended, we can do that, and likely to provoke a violent response. Should there instead be a different subsection to harassment, which has to do with publicly insulting such other person, just anybody, by abusive words or gestures in a manner intended and likely to provoke a response as opposed to a violent response, or maybe in the manner intended to intimidate the other person? Because we've got free speech issues, and the question is, can we say at some point that someone has gone so far as to commit a crime? And I'd say you'd have to talk about intimidation, and if it's abusive enough that's intended to intimidate the sports official into making bad calls or favoring one side or the other, I think you can nail them. But I'm just getting at, and we'll have to talk about this in the committee, whether or not the harassment law that you're amending right now is going to do you any good, because it's not, you put the sports official on the stand and you say, is it likely that you're going to run into the stands and slug this so-called fan who's been using abusive language, and the sports official is going to say, no, that's against our rules, I wouldn't do that, and all of a sudden, no conviction. I'm raising that at the outset because I think we're going to need to be watching the language of the criminal law. I don't expect you gentlemen to be lawyers and criminal law experts. What I'd like to do, though, is give each of you some time to simply spend a couple of minutes giving us your perspective on the problem, and then we'll grapple with the solutions here. The punitive damage, liquidated damages is great for the civil action for someone who's on the field and engages in offensive physical contact, because then when that athlete shoves you on the chest, you could say, well, that just cost you $1,000 because it doesn't require any real injury. But I'll stop there. I just wanted to let you know that we're looking at this and trying to figure out the best way to do it.
If I could just respond real quickly, clearly the intent here in the practice on the field is, you know, for the referee to not run around trying to listen for every, you know, word out in the audience. Clearly people are going to object to calls. And so the biggest concern there is if someone is trying to threaten or intimidate, that official, which has, happened to me, that is not appropriate.
Now, for private facilities, by the way, private facilities can set up their own rules of conduct and just say that if you violate these rules of conduct, you'll be ejected because, in effect, your contract of admission says you will be well-behaved and meet our rules. Public facilities, we might get into a little bit more of an argument. But even there, when you're charging an admission, I think you can have some standards. So we'll have some discussion. You've got a red card there?
Well, I think we can cover the ejection part.
That's with the athlete?
No.
Oh, with the fan, too?
Absolutely. And quite frankly, if people are out of control, my standard response is very common to say, perhaps the coaches, you have 60 minutes. You have 60 seconds to get this under control or the game will be ended. And 99% of the time, that problem goes away, right at that point. But in terms of the $1,000 fine, when we're talking about trying to teach an entire league, an entire community, multiple sports, of having the parents be under control, teach your kids the right thing, we need something out there to be a message to be able to do that. So in that circumstance, $1,000 is a very reasonable event in terms of trying to get that very difficult and expensive message across to so many people.
Yes, Remsen was asking.
And regarding the $1,000, why $1,000, and who is going to actually be the recipients of that $1,000?
Well, it would be up to a judge, but it limits it at that amount, and then it would be the referee that would be assaulted, would be my understanding.
My reading of this is no limit. It says shall receive. That means absolutely bottom threshold, $1,000.
Well, if it goes through that stage, that would be fine. If it goes to a judge and it's resolved, that's not unreasonable once it's gotten to that point.
Which committee handled this in the Senate?
Senate Judiciary, right. And the amendments were written by Senator Bryant. So.
It doesn't say any amount of up to $1,000. It says $1,000. Interesting. Well, we'll worry about that, too. Let's hear from you gentlemen. Maybe we'll just start here and work our way down.
Go ahead. Good morning. My name is Tom Welter. I'm an assistant executive director with the Oregon School Activities Association. Thank you for allowing us to share some comments with you this morning about this legislation. The OSA represents 285 high schools all over the state of Oregon. We conduct 77 different state championships and 19 different activities. Each year, we coordinate 105 officials associations all over the state of Oregon to officiate high school athletic contests. We coordinate officials in the sports of football, soccer, volleyball, basketball, wrestling, baseball, and softball. Each year, we annually certify over 3,000 men and women to officiate high school athletics in our state. You're well aware of the national events.
Did you mention your name at the outset for the record?
Yes, I did.
I wasn't. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's Tom Welter.
I'm sorry, Mr. Welter.
That's
go
okay.
Ahead.
You're all aware of the recent national events that have occurred in athletics. Roberto Alomar spitting in the face of an umpire. Latrell Sprewell choking his coach. Dennis Rodman doing anything and everything he wants to do. But let me talk a little bit about what's happened in our state in high school athletics in the last 3 years. 2 years ago, we had a high school baseball game at the 4A level in the Portland metropolitan area. We had a bench-clearing brawl in the second inning when the umpires cleared the scene and ejected every player that was involved. neither team had enough players left to continue the game, and so it was a league game, and it had to be a double forfeit where they both lost because not enough players were left. We had a former Major League Baseball player serving as a coach at one of our member schools who made physical contact with an umpire in objecting to a call. He was ejected by the umpire in question and was subsequently fined by our executive board of our association for his actions. Last year, during a 2A baseball playoff game in Eastern Oregon, we had another bench-clearing brawl. Police were required to escort the team out of the town following the conclusion of the game. This last winter, at a 2A basketball game, the officials felt the need to terminate the contest prior to the time expiring because of a volatile situation in which two players had to be ejected. During a 4A boys basketball game in the Portland metropolitan area this last winter, there were approximately 4 minutes to go in the game when a parent in the stands started a brawl with students from the opposing school. Because of the situation, the game was terminated with 4 minutes to go and never completed. The score stood at that point, and the contest was declared over by the officials. The school administrators concurred with the officials' ruling that it was time to terminate the contest and try to resolve the situation as quickly as possible. During our recent 3A basketball tournament at Gill Coliseum in Corvallis, we had an off-duty corrections officer follow officials into the locker room after a game and have to be restrained by paid security people because his daughter's team had just lost the game by 2 points. During a 4A boys basketball game this past winter in the Portland metropolitan area, we had an official hit in the lip by a piece of hard candy, went entirely through his lip, cut him, blood all over the floor. He fell to the floor, not sure whether he had been shot or what had happened to him. Because he had called his partner, the other official, had called a technical foul on one of the players. These incidents are happening more and more frequently. You have before you recent legislation that our association has passed in attempting to deal with what we are experiencing in our member schools. We now have a policy in place that if a player or coach is ejected from a contest, they're also suspended for the following contest. We have a policy in place a year ago that any time there is any kind of physical contact, whether it's the bill of a cap touching the umpire, any kind of physical contact with an official, there's an automatic ejection and up to a $1,000 fine that our executive board fines to the school. At the bottom of that sheet, starting this year, because we are suspending players and coaches after ejections, shows you how many ejections we've had in our sports through the winter sports season this past fall. You need to realize that every one of those ejections is a potential volatile situation for the official.
I'm going to interrupt you and tell you that I think you'll find that we're sympathetic to the problem, and we recognize the issue, and we're willing to address the issue. Because our time is short this morning, I'm going to ask you to wrap up in about a minute and then ask each of the other officials present to comment.
I will be brief. The sports culture in this country, in our society, is changing, and it's basically out of control. I think we all realize that. We can't play a high school game at the varsity level in this state without officials. If we want the young people in our state to be able to experience the same opportunities that we experienced as kids, we need to protect the people that are required to have these contests. The official at a contest is in control of that contest, just like the teacher in a classroom is in control of the classroom. Our officials are state representatives, they're policemen, they're firemen, they're insurance salesmen, they're delivery people, they're teachers.
One Supreme Court justice.
Court justice, that's correct. They need to feel confident that they can carry out the duties that they've been assigned to do without fear of their own personal safety. So we would ask you to please consider that in reviewing this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just real quickly point out that most of the officials that would be assaulted in the state of Oregon are kids themselves.
Yeah, that's true, too. You've got kids who are officials.
And Marcus, yes. I'd ask Marcus to go next.
Representative King, who do you want next?
Marcus Singh, please.
I'm Marcus Singh. I'm the founder of Mid-Valley Sports Officials Group. This was, along with Senator Troll, this was introduced upon my request. I represent 55 soccer officials, about 50 baseball umpires, 40 softball umpires, and I'm the assistant commissioner for about 85 basketball officials in the Benton, Lynn, and Lincoln County areas. I'm not going to go through the details because you have all a big file in front of you, but I think what's most important here is the message that we send. And I know you guys have a lot of nuts and bolts to iron out. We realize that. A lot of these nuts and bolts were done by the Senate Judiciary Committee. But we need to be proactive. We have to send, if this passes in whatever form, and we hope desperately that something passes, to send the message to the public that it's not open season on officials anymore. Like according to Representative King, this bill, Mr. Welter and Mr. Ediger represent the OSAA. I do a lot of high school sports, but I do other sports, too, that are not high school. We have to protect, this protects all officials, not just high school officials, but recreation league officials, youth officials. We have a lot of youth that are trying to start out because this is a great avocation, and they're getting intimidated, like you said, Mr. Mannix. They're getting scared by these adult so-called parental role models. And that's not right. And you know, I don't know about the nuts and bolts and how we can change that because that's almost part of our ugly human nature. But we have to do something to protect this because a lot of us here, I've got 20 years in and I can't put another 20 years in. Mr. Welter didn't touch on it, but our numbers are declining. And a lot of it is because they're scared to go out there. We're not in it for the money. The money is very little. At the highest amateur sport level, high school, not county college, the best game fee that we make at the high school level is $44 a game. That isn't very much money. The entry fee is like $20 a game. And so once we give up our 10 more years, there's not going to be anyone to replace us. So we just want to send a message, and you guys are the way to do it.
And what I'm doing is, because we're on a tighter schedule today, we are sensitive to the need for the legislation. We won't be working the bill today, but as you'll see in a few minutes on other bills, we are being pretty tight about our agenda. If I felt that members of this committee needed to be convinced that there's a problem, I'd go on for 2 hours, but I don't think we need to be convinced, but I do want to give each of you a chance to touch on that. So I appreciate, Mr. Rang, your testimony. And who did you want next to represent?
Mr. Paget's an official who has been assaulted. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Mark Paget. I live in Tigard, and I'm a member of the National Association of Sports Officials, and I'm contact person for that organization in Oregon for this legislation. I'm also vice president of the Tualatin Hills Basketball Officials Association and a board member of the Tigard-Sherwood Youth Basketball Association, who represent 1,000 kids playing basketball in grades 3 through 8. And at our last board meeting, we passed a resolution in favor of the theory behind this legislation. And please note, this was not an association of basketball officials. This was a basketball organization that recognizes the need for this type of legislation. And I'd like to address Representative Bowman's question as to why is there special legislation needed beyond what's already on the books. Well, youth sports programs are the most cost-effective means of gang prevention. I'm firmly convinced of that. They teach kids fair play, sportsmanship, how to use their mind and bodies together. They build self-esteem, and they teach respect for authority. When we set coaches and parents up as role models, we do so for positive reasons, but when coaches and parents abuse officials, the message that goes to the kids is that violence is an acceptable means to deal with anger. And that's not the message we want to send to kids. We've recognized the theory that some crimes do go beyond the effect of just the effect of the victim, and that the crime has an effect on society, a ripple effect. This is one of those crimes. Another important aspect is many associations try to provide training and jobs for high schoolers as officials. With the escalation of violence, this is getting harder and harder. In the Tigard-Sherwood League, we've had 3 parents pull their kids out of the officiating program because they feared for the kids' safety. This is the worst type of referee abuse. My son Josh, who's now 18, has been refereeing since he was 12 years old, and he was featured in the magazine Sports Illustrated for Kids as a Little League umpire and basketball official. When he was 15, a coach during a game, an adult coach, ran out on the floor with his fist raised to try and punch him because he disagreed with a call. Later that season, a coach challenged him, an adult, to a fight in a parking lot after a game at a middle school. 2 years later, that adult was a person of interest in a murder investigation. This is really scary stuff, folks. The real value in the bill will be in its publicity. I know that our association will see to it that this information is included in every registration form that goes to every coach and parent. And what we're seeing the violence drop down now is to the player level. Young kids challenging officials, bumping them, swearing at them, pushing them in some instances. And where are the kids getting this behavior? They're getting it from the parents, the coaches, and spectators that abuse officials. I urge you to join the 12 states that already have similar legislation, soon to be 13. There's a bill on the governor of Illinois' desk right now to sign. You'll be sending this message to coaches and parents that we will not entrust them with the job of role model and then allow them to send this frightening message to our kids. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Padgett.
I have copies here for the clerk.
All right. And Representative King, did you want Mr. Price to go next or Mr. Edgar?
If you could, please.
Mr. Price.
My name is Robert Price. I am here representing the 120 members of the Portland Baseball Umpires Association. I am also a member of the Portland Football Officials Association, although I don't speak for that association this morning. Between my own activities in both baseball and football, I've got an aggregated total of 30 years of officiating experience. We've all got war stories of things that have happened, and I won't go into that. What we're looking for, and is what Chairman Mannix mentioned, we're not lawyers, we're not the lawmakers, we don't know how to write this stuff. We're depending upon you folks to do that. My own interest is that we be protected from the physical violence that is there already, but you don't hear about it often enough because it's not publicized, we're not protected. We need protection, recourse, and a deterrent to that kind of problem. Very simply, when you're an official, you have to put up with the verbal abuse. It just goes with the territory. You have to develop a set of blinders, if you will, for that sort of thing. And I'm perfectly willing myself, my own personal situation, I'm willing to put up with that. What I'm not willing to put up with is the physical abuse and the potential for something worse. And every year, in my experience in both baseball and football and then watching other sports, we are getting closer and closer and closer to what I could term a disastrous situation between an official and either a parent, a player, a coach, or some other, other participant in the situation. We are getting closer and closer to it. And you've seen the clip, I think, on TV about the wrestling official who was cold-conked, if you will, by the losing wrestler. And this is just up in Washington. The guy's had long-term ongoing problems as a result of that. Unfortunately, he had no recourse because at that time Washington did not have law in place. Those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. Those are the kinds of things, frankly, I'm afraid of. But, you know, I still go out and do that sort of stuff. We take valuable time from family and job to assist our youth. And true, we get paid for it, but as Marcus said, you know, it's nominal pay. It doesn't really mean anything. I use mine to buy Christmas gifts, from my football fees and what have you. But it's a situation where people do not understand why we do this thing. I mean, people ask us, why do you put up with all this crap? It's as Marcus said, we have trouble getting new officials into our associations. And a large part of that problem is that new people who are considering becoming officials look at that particular negative aspect and say, I'm not going to take that chance. I'm not going to put up with it. And if we have some protection, recourse, and deterrent, that's great for us. We leave it up to you folks to take care of that.
Well, having grown up in sports, I am sympathetic to what you're saying, and being a legislator, I know about nominal pay and taking abuse. But my concern is, and I just want to follow up a little bit on Representative Bowman's question. It doesn't seem like it's been answered. There are laws now against assault. There are laws against the kinds of things that you're describing. And my concern is, if we're not enforcing those laws to protect you, if somebody was, whatever you said was a wrestling coach was Colcock or something, and the people are being physically harmed, there are laws against that kind of assault now, and if we don't enforce the laws that exist, why is having one more law going to do you any good if we don't enforce that one either?
I can answer that. I think if you went to the website for the National Association of Sports Officials, that question's answered very well. And what it will tell you is it has a listing of court cases across the country where officials have pursued through the normal courts to try and get some sort of action against people who have done this. And the general feeling, and this is a generalization, I admit, from judges and prosecutors is, oh, it was a sporting event, it was in the heat of the battle, everybody yells at sporting events, that's just part of the territory, and I'm not going to take it as seriously as a true assault. And this is what we're seeing all across the country, and that's why we're asking for this type of legislation, which would separate this out and make judges and prosecutors aware that there is a specific problem for this specific type of assault, and to get them to take it seriously.
President Krasinski, do you have a follow-up? President
Krasinski. If I could just follow up with what Representative Sinceri was saying, I see this as two components to this bill. The criminal side is just taking the existing statute, which is harassment, which is a Class B misdemeanor as it pertains to individuals, where you don't have the sexual undertones, which are taken up to Class A. And this would just say, if you're a sporting official and you have just the offensive physical contact, where between us on the street, it would be a Class B. Because of the setting, because of the activity that's going on, it would raise it to a Class A misdemeanor. But the charge and the offense itself is still the same. It's just leveling or bringing up the potential penalty. The other part, which I think some of us may not be grasping, is that it's not really in the criminal setting. It's in the civil side, where if an official decides to go on a civil suit, that there would be a proposed required penalty to be paid if the court finds that there was, in fact, some type of conduct that was inappropriate in the civil setting. The court would, and as the bill is written now, says it shall be $1,000 liquidated fine. And so that's different from the criminal side. So we're talking two different things, and I guess I come back to what Representative Sinceri says. We've got the laws here. The question we have is, do we want to up the penalty for that type of contact on the harassment? Because if you actually have pain, substantial pain or some type of injury, then we're not even going to be dealing with the harassment except for a lesser included charge, because then we're into assaults. And I guess I'm very surprised and kind of shocked. I'd love to know what district attorney's offices in this state are not pursuing these type of criminal actions if you have physical injury to an official. I'd love to have that addressed.
In your notes that was in the Senate Judiciary testimony, Rusty Sarbacher, Salem resident, last summer or the summer before, was umpiring a summer baseball game at Silverton. He ejected the coach, turned around, walked away like you were trained to do, got cold cocked behind the ear, filed charges with the Silverton Police Department. I don't know why. I can't speak for the Silverton Police Department, but according to Rusty, who testified the Senate side, Silverton Police Department said, we can do nothing. This is an assault. So I'm not a lawyer, but Representative Sinceri, this is what's really happening out there here in Oregon.
The problem is a broader issue, but we can focus on this specific issue. The broader issue is, for instance, in Marion County, Class B and Class C misdemeanors are not likely to be prosecuted because of a resources priority. You've got Class A felonies, Class B felonies, Class C felonies, Class A misdemeanors, Class B misdemeanors, Class C misdemeanors, and then violations, which drop off below the floor. And actually, violations probably happen more often because they can usually just do a citation form and get a fine out of somebody. But the problem is, for instance, in Marion County, the district attorney will tell you that he is unlikely to prosecute B and C misdemeanors. Moving this up to an A misdemeanor increases the likelihood that some prosecutors will go for it because you'll see more bang for the buck in terms of response. There is a broader issue that we've been trying to grapple with, which is the need to put more resources into prosecution, because there should be no community where B and C misdemeanors are not prosecuted. A C misdemeanor can get you some time in jail, so can a B misdemeanor right now, though it won't happen unless you're prosecuted. But we shouldn't, we're not going to hang that social policy issue on your backs. I'm just pointing it out to you as to what's going on here. Then I've got Representative Gianella, Representative Hansen, Representative Pazansky, and then we'll get to Mr. Etiquette.
Mr. Chair, I was
I'm sorry, you got to follow up?
I mean, based on what I just heard, that was not a, I mean, that wasn't harassment, but it was an assault. I mean, if you hit somebody in the back of the head and knock them down, I would say, as a prosecutor, that's substantial pain. I would be very surprised if that umpire stood up and said, oh, no, that didn't hurt. And so there seems to be a breakdown. I'm not wanting to point fingers at one particular county, but the reality is the law enforcement should be filing those charges with the district attorney's office for them to make that determination, because what I just heard was a Class A misdemeanor, that it was on assault in the fourth degree.
I think to answer that, I think the same attitude is going through our criminal justice system about sporting events being kind of a different universe, and that things can be allowed at sporting events that aren't normally allowed out in the general populace and during the normal work day. That's why people who, as we said earlier, are normal, law-abiding, nice people, go crazy at sporting events and just lose it. It's because we put this aura around a sporting event that it's okay to abuse the referee or the umpire. Sports Illustrated runs a cover, Kill the Ump, you know, and people just laugh about it. I mean, it's a cliche, but I think it's the same feeling going through the justice system that is in the minds of the people who think that it's okay to do this. And I think that's what's happening. That's why we're not seeing the prosecution.
Representative Gianella.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I see the value in this bill as being a deterrent to crime with the publicity and the education aspect of it, going out and educating people, and just the fact that the publicity's out there will send a message, and I see it as a deterrent to crime, just like the bill on inhalants. Maybe it was very shallow, but the publicity of it and getting the message out is very important.
Well, the first part of this bill that allows these, and in fact, this first part is really creating a civil fine that you collect as damages, $1,000. I see now why it's not up to $1,000. It's $1,000, and I guess the word will go out. It's sort of like a Measure 11 fine for this kind of conduct. You know, if you're found in civil court to have done this, you're going to pay $1,000, no ifs, ands, or buts. And I could see the, say, the State Sports Association hiring a private attorney and saying, you will now sue anybody on behalf of any officials, set up a network, and start filing some lawsuits. And pretty quickly, maybe some people will get the message after they start writing $1,000 checks that it's not appropriate. That's the first part. The second part is the criminal sanction part, which we get into this government resources issue, which is unfortunate.
And please note that the bill only covers officials that are a member of an association or organization that provides training. So this isn't a bill that's going to cover somebody's dad out in the driveway calling a game between a couple of neighbors playing basketball or whatever.
But we get the message here. Representative Hansen.
I'll be able to support the bill in whatever final wording we work out. But my question is, what in this whole general area, are you getting support from the leagues, from the principals, from the sporting associations in terms of removing these style of coaches that use this type of intimidation factor?
Yeah.
Are they being gleaned out of the mix, and are you getting supports from the leagues in terms
of this past
of
season sport? In the Tiger Sherwood Youth Basketball Association, we had a coach who swung and hit an official on the wrist. This is a high school girl. A junior in high school, bruised her wrist to the point where she couldn't participate in two softball games. She's on Tigard High softball team, where she couldn't participate in the softball game. That coach has been banned for life from the program. So it didn't help her, and it's not going to stop. It might not stop that guy that goes way, way, way over the edge. But this is going to stop the borderline people who may be thinking about doing something like that.
Well, it seems to me that the leagues themselves can really help to establish a tone. Before somebody goes out and actually assaults an official, there's probably some types of conduct leading up to that that would be good indications that this person isn't a good role model for kids and shouldn't be in that kind of a volatile situation.
You can't screen parents.
Well, parents and spectators are a different issue, but when we look at the number of coaches that are getting ejected, coaches that are involved in this type of conduct, I I just can't see how we can continue to...
Representative Hansen, it's the leagues and the associations that do these that are asking for the help perhaps the most. When you have an organization and you might have 5,000 coaches out there, it's really, and then statewide, we may be talking, what, 100,000, 200,000 coaches in the state, and you need more than what you have. It's really difficult to get that out, so they need some help in getting that message out to them, because the public relations investment it takes to get there is huge, to be able to get that training out to many people.
I would also add to that that the Coaches Association themselves have just instituted, which our association board approved, a training program for coaches, which includes a lot of things on sportsmanship and so on. So we hope that we have not previously had that program, and it's just new.
All right. Mr. Edgar, you haven't had a chance to.
I think anything that I would say at this point would be redundant, and I know in the essence of time, I will just pass my time. So.
All right. Gentlemen, we'll be working on this. We appreciate your coming this morning.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wanted to testify in Senate Bill 482? Seeing no other witnesses, this public hearing is closed. We will move into a work session on House Bill 2352. This is a bill which directs the Secretary of State to put some information on the ballot as to the victims' rights resolutions that assumes passage, of course, which this will come up later on. We'll do, over time we can always adjust this if need be, but we have in front of us the -4 amendments to House Bill 2352, and I'd ask Representative Simmons if he moves the -4 amendments, which brings the bill into conformity with the resolutions, the majority report resolutions.
Mr. Chair, I would move.
All right. Representative Simmons moves adoption of the -4 amendments to House Bill 2352. Discussion? Representative Zansky.
Just looking at what we're talking about and bringing in conformance, should we not wait and see what the actual end result is on the floor as to what does or doesn't move through
the
body?
Yes and no, in the sense that we can send this on to the Senate, and then whatever goes over to the Senate, they can change it there in conformity, and then we can concur their amendments. Further discussion? We'll call the roll on the motion to adopt the -4 amendments to 2352.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Clinton-Terry?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
No.
Chair Mannix?
Aye. The motion is adopted. Representative Simmons, do you move the bill to the floor of the due pass as amended?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard that motion. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brzezinski.
Just out of curiosity, does this not need to be accompanying the other bill that's going to Ways and Means regarding the financial? I know it doesn't have a financial itself, but it seems like they should be together.
No, in the sense that this assumes that there is going to be an election established. If the election is not established, then this bill is moot. But there will be no extra financial impact on this bill. But you're right, if the other bill doesn't pass out, this won't do any good. All right, further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion to send to the floor with a due pass as amended.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
No.
Chairman?
Aye. The motion carries. House Bill 2352 as amended is sent to the floor with a due pass. I'll assign myself as carrier. That closes the work session on 2352. Colleagues, I'll explain something and then move us into work session. Yesterday, the co-chairs of Ways and Means did sign the referral of House Bill 23, whatever it was, the firearms bill, 2535, to the Public Safety Subcommittee, and it will be heard tomorrow on Public Safety. We have a certain Senate bill available to us should there be any difficulty involved in these issues, which we will hold in reserve. So we have a vehicle in the garage, gassed up and ready if we need it, and I'm just explaining as to why I feel comfortable moving ahead into work session on House Bill 3049, and we have that bill in front of us, plus -3 amendments, which have been proposed. Mr. Counsel?
Chair, I move that they ask three amendments sent to 3049.
All right. Whoops, didn't we hand out the copies?
Yeah, I think everybody has.
All right. All right, Representative Sinceri moves adoption of the dash three amendments to House Bill 3049. President Pazansky?
I assume from looking at the date and from not having these in my file before today that we just received them?
Yes. They are changed from the dash twos. The dash twos have the Attorney General do the study. The dash threes have Legislative Council do the study. That's the change.
And can we have some discussion as to the allocation of the money, as to why we are, when allocating any money to the amount that we're looking at, and what that will actually buy in the time? I mean, thinking about the Attorney General's office at $90 an hour, as compared to what the rate may be. I mean, there's not really a rate that I know of that we'll see. So.
Well, in fact, although when we come up to motion, the motion will be to send this to Ways and Means, where they can certainly weigh whether or not the $25,000 is appropriate. I've conferred with Mr. Chamoff, the Legislative Council, and he advises that the $25,000 additional appropriation is sufficient to fund the study in his office. The other question, which will come up on a referral to Ways and Means, is why send it to Ways and Means is less than $50,000. When Representative Simmons had a bill for $45,000, it ended up being referred to Ways and Means after we sent it out without referring. It went to the floor, but on the Senate side, they went ahead and sent it to Ways and Means on the basis that since it made an appropriation, it needed to go through Ways and Means. So I did track that down, Representative Bowman, because you'd asked me about that.
Sure.
But right now, it's to the dash 3 minutes. Representative Pazansky.
Can we have a discussion as to why, looking at this, Section 3 is included when I look at what the intent of the bill is? It looks like we just stuck something else in there, and I'm wondering.
The original bill says that local government cannot bring lawsuits against manufacturers. The amendments say that there will be a study, and also says that the Attorney General may not bring a lawsuit against manufacturers, firearms manufacturers, unless the Legislative Assembly specifically authorizes it.
I'm going to object to Section 3 at this point.
Okay.
And I'd also like clarification as to whether or not are we mixed topics. I'm looking at the relating clause. It does say relating to firearms.
I think all of this is germane to that topic.
But I guess I don't see where whatever
Section 3 is attempting to address,
how that fits into the remainder of the bill regarding some type of study to be done by LC.
Well, the theory of the bill, if it's amended this way, is that cities and counties and local government are preempted from bringing lawsuits against manufacturers. Legislative Council will gear up and do a study about what's going on with those lawsuits to see whether or not the state of Oregon should join the plaintiffs or should step in on behalf of the manufacturers. One theory might be that in order to defend our right to keep and bear arms, we need to protect the manufacturers from these lawsuits, which would be an interesting new legal theory for a state to bring, but it's a possible one. And at the same time, to say to the Attorney General, you too hold off unless and until we authorize legal action. So we freeze legal actions and conduct a study. It all fits together. One may not agree with it, but it all does fit together.
Mr. Chair.
I would say that Section 3 harmonizes easily with Section 1, and we could have either created Section 3 or we could have added Attorney Generals to the other list of people that are prohibited in Section 1. And I think it would be 6-1, half dozen of the other.
Mr. Chair, I still object to what's before us. We have not heard any testimony from that witness stand, at least from the time I've been here, regarding the need or necessity to preempt either local jurisdictions or the state from being able to use whatever appropriate tools that are in their toolbox at this point to deal with whatever issues they find is necessary or appropriate.
We did have a public hearing on the bill, and the proponents were here during what I call Firearms Week.
Got lost in the barrage, I guess.
Chair. Representative Simmons.
Are we in work session?
We have a motion from Representative Sinceri. We were debating the motion.
I would just comment that I think it's entirely appropriate that we advance this this bill with the Dash 3 amendments in it. There have been a lot of lawsuits brought around the nation against gun manufacturers. We would be remiss in not requiring that we step back and take a look at the whole situation. And while we're doing that, taking a look at the whole situation by our Attorney General to get involved in lawsuits of this type.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Pazansky.
I want to make sure the record's quite clear. What, if anything, does this do to a private action by an individual against any gun manufacturer if they choose to seek that type of redress?
This has no restriction whatsoever on the right of any individual to bring a private action, except to the extent that if the state decided to step in and intervene on behalf of the manufacturer against the individual and say, your lawsuit is being used to reduce the availability of firearms, which thereby reduces the right to keep and bear arms of Oregonians, especially modern firearms as opposed to used firearms.
Mr. Chair, I also want to make sure that the record is clear. I mean, I'm watching what's happening with the tobacco case and the suit that's currently taking place between Philip Morris and the state of Oregon because of the punitive award that was ordered. If we have a similar case against a gun manufacturer, and it will happen eventually, and Oregon may be the first, this would prohibit the state of Oregon from accepting those punitive damages or in any way making sure that the state's interest has been addressed in that issue.
Well, it would prohibit any lawsuit unless the legislative assembly approved it. I would assume the Legislative Assembly will have to weigh that after they get the report back from the Legislative Council, who would evaluate the pros and cons.
And why was the Legislative Council picked as the appropriate agency to do an investigation of this sort?
Well, there are the people that are available to the Legislative Assembly for legal research.
Certainly closer to this body than the Attorney General.
And they are answerable to the Legislative Assembly as opposed to the Attorney General. Representative Pazansky.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there's two things. One is that they may be closer to us, but they're not the ones that are going to be defending the state, so it seems like you'd want the certified smart people that are charged with defending the state regarding any challenges to this type of legislation. And then
okay.
I do have one other matter
sure.
I can bring up. I don't know if this is the appropriate time or if you want to wait until we get through the debate, but before we take a vote, I do have one other procedural matter.
All right. Representative Hanson.
Well, trying to understand the scope of this, would this prevent a city from suing a manufacturer in terms of I know the general theory in terms of where some of these lawsuits are coming from, but what about a firearm that was improperly manufactured, it blew up in the hands of a law enforcement officer?
Section 1, sub 2.
Are we... Section 1, sub 2.
Breach of contract or warranty, you can still bring an action for that.
Okay. The general premise, and that's the reason I'll be opposing any piece of this, is I cannot see where the state has a compelling interest in telling every city and county and local government what lawsuits are in their benefit or aren't in their benefit. I don't think if I was on the Portland City Council, I would support going forward with this type of a lawsuit. But I'm not on the Portland City Council. I'm not benefit to their legal analysis. I'm not benefit to whatever in-depth hearings and studies they're going to have on this matter. This is just an incredible preemption of cities and counties' local ability to make good decisions in behalf of their citizens. It would be no different than if we had a different political climate in this building and we prohibited the city of LeGrand from filing some form of lawsuit to protect them from to protect them from some environmental actions. I just don't, it's just a total affront to local government and getting local citizens to be in charge of their own affairs and events that are occurring within their cities. So I'll probably be opposing every bit of this, with every breath that I have.
All right. Representative Brzezinski?
I guess there's two other things. One, looking at the dash threes and looking at the original bill, I don't see the same safeguards that we're going to be providing to cities and counties and any department agency or other authority of those entities to be able to sue on a breach of contract or warranty. So basically our state police officers, if they should have something go wrong with their weapons, that would be similar to any of the cities or counties. This bill, as the way I'm reading at this point, is going to preempt them from being able to follow up on any breach of warranty or contract.
Well, I disagree with that. You can certainly follow up on the breach of warranty or contract. You just can't file a lawsuit. And then
right.
2 years from now, we'll have the study back, and we can make a determination as to whether or not there's any state entities that have a need to file lawsuits based on the report from legislative council.
And, Mr. Chair, the last thing I guess I'm going to bring up. Since we now have a dash three that's dated May 19th, 1999, and we've acknowledged that it's just been received today, I'm wondering if we have a fiscal impact statement for the dash threes. And if we don't, I believe we will be out of order to vote this out today until we have that in front of us.
Did we get a fiscal impact statement for the dash twos?
No, Mr. Chairman, we do have a fiscal impact statement for the bill, but not for the dash twos or the dash threes.
And, of course, if we determine that we're going to send this to Ways and Means, then we don't need a fiscal impact statement because we can let Ways and Means.
That
we'll have to clear that on the main motion as to where this bill goes. The motion in front of us, though, is the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments moved by Representative Cesari. So noting that there's some objection, I'd ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Bowman?
Nope.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Nope.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative
Cesari? Aye.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
Nope.
Aye. The motion carries. The dash three amendments are adopted. Representative Cesari? Sure.
I move House Bill 3049 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Cesari moves House Bill 3049 with the dash three amendment to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would bring the same objection that I'd like to have that noted for the record without having the rules in front of me as to whether or not it is applicable or not applicable for motions of sending bills to Ways and Means versus just out to the floor.
All right. So the objection is noted. I would note that since the measure makes an appropriation, it's within the discretion of the committee anytime there's an appropriation to send a bill to Ways and Means and then let them deal with fiscal one way or another before it goes to either floor. So with that, we'll take a vote on the motion to send this bill to Ways and Means of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative
aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
No.
Chair Manning?
Aye. The motion is carried. House Bill 3049 is sent to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended. And that closes the work session on House Bill 3049. Colleagues, it's just after 10 o'clock. I do have some people here. Let's see this, if we have agreement on Senate Bill 35, if that can be worked quickly. Folks that are here on Senate Bill 345, we will have to set that over unless it turns out to be a real quickie. Let's see what we can do first on Senate Bill 35. What do we have, Council?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the Dash 3 amendments, and these were requested by, I don't remember the party's name, but the proponent of the bill, and if that person is here to...
Research Standards and Practices Commission?
Yes, that is correct.
Dash 3 amendments?
I believe these are designed to take care of the problem that existed with the bill before.
It's okay with me.
Gentlemen, I'll ask, first we'll go into work session on Senate Bill 35. I'll ask you gentlemen to introduce yourselves to the record and tell us whether you have concurrence on these amendments or not.
Chair, for your record, Greg McMurdo from the Department of Education, we do.
David Mikan from Teacher Standards and Practices, we support the amendments.
All right, the chair would entertain a motion that the dash B3 amendments be adopted. But President Bowman, do you want to ask a question
before
first?
We do that, all we have is like numbers. I want to know what they added, what they took out, and what the reasoning was behind what they did.
Could you tell us about the changes in the dash 3 amendments, please?
Mr. Chairman, the only change, and it looks like there's a lot of bold, and there is a lot of bold language and bracketed. That was changes legislative council made to existing law. There are only two crimes that have been added as a result, or if the dash 3 amendments are adopted, and those are the crimes that were enacted by the last session of the legislature that did not get, were not put in the statute, and that's 163-688, which is possession of materials depicting sexually explicit conduct of a child in the first degree, which is a Class B felony, and ORS 363.689, which is possession of materials depicting sexually explicit conduct of a child in the second degree, which is a Class C felony.
So those are the two new items.
And wasn't there a debate about whether 15 years or 5 years and what was appropriate for some versus others?
Mr. Chair, what we did was go back to the way the law is originally written, and there would be no distinction between our category of 5 years or 10 years.
All right. I believe Representative Bowman will be objecting to the amendments, but I'd ask first if Representative Cesari moved the dash B3 amendments to Senate Bill 35. Or do you want me to ask him now? All right. Representative Cesari moves the dash B3 amendments to Senate Bill 35. Any further discussion? The clerk will call the roll on that motion.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
Aye.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sanchez?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Brzezinski? Aye. Aye. The motion carries. Representative Sanchez, do you move Senate Bill 35 as amended to the floor with a due pass?
Okay. I move.
All right. Representative Sanchez so moves. Further discussion? Seeing none, I believe there's an objection.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say we worked very hard to try to make a distinction between misdemeanors and felonies and what would be appropriate for someone to even be considered to go back into the teaching profession. And I'm just a little offended that they went off and decided, no, 15 years is it, and then we're just supposed to push this through the process.
Well, Representative Bowman, all I can say is we've had these amendments for 5 days. I was satisfied with the changes, and anyone who's dissatisfied with the changes can object to them.
I just feel like we're just pushing this through, and we had a very long, detailed conversation about this, and this was not what we had talked about before they went off to talk about some of the other issues.
Now, that's a very legitimate point, and we can certainly disagree with what they've agreed with. I just happen to be comfortable, which is why I'll vote yes, but if you're uncomfortable, that's why we're here. And if the majority of us are uncomfortable, we should send them back out to fix it. So the clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative
Simmons?
Aye.
Representative
Sanchez?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Brzezinski? No. Aye. Motion
carries. Mr. Chair, I want to give you notice of a possible minority report.
All right, so Representative Bowman gives notice of a possible minority report on Senate Bill 35. Otherwise, it's been sent to the floor with a due pass. I'll designate myself as a carrier. And that closes the work session on Senate Bill 35. My quick question is on Senate Bill 345. I have two witnesses here for, and we haven't heard from the floor yet. They're usually doing singing and dancing and opening ceremonies. Why don't we do this? I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 345 and bind up Diane Middle and Kevin Campbell, the two witnesses signed up. Anyone else in the room here that wanted to be here on Senate Bill 345? Seeing none, counsel, would you summarize the measure, please?
Mr. Chairman, what this does is it replaces a list of some occupations with the term public safety personnel or public safety officer and some statutes that have to do with the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training as well as the Department of Public Safety Standards and Trainings, and allows the Board to establish some accreditation standards for training programs for those public safety personnel, which can be offered by either public or private entities.
Do I understand that this basically gives you some flexibility about how you handle all these various classifications so that every time a new classification is created, you don't have to come up with a new statutory change and a new definition?
Chairman, if members of the committee, I'm Diane Middle, Director of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. It does do that, and it allows us to look at different ways that we can do training by combining our resources with other entities and also collect fees where possible to support advanced training.
Was there any objection to this bill in the Senate?
We have worked out all those objections through amendments, and it comes with complete agreement now.
And there's nobody here objecting to it, and I haven't heard from anybody objecting to it. Mr. Campbell, what do you have to say?
Chief supported, as Kevin Campbell, Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, as constituents of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, this will allow creative delivery of training systems to rural areas of the state and areas like the South Coast that are not really accessible to the Central Academy, and gives us a chance to relieve some of the pressure off of those agencies.
Now, colleagues, I've read this before and I was comfortable with it, but I don't want to rush you if you want a chance to evaluate this further. It just seemed that there was no objection to it, but I don't. If you want more time, we'll take more time. Otherwise,
it would be advisable.
More time?
I think that would be good.
All right, we'll take more time on this. Did you want to say anything else at this time?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll set this for work session probably Monday.
Except for tomorrow.
We have it already on the calendar. Good. Well, then it'll come up again tomorrow. If in the meantime there's any concerns, if you can both be here tomorrow, we'll try to work the bill tomorrow morning. All right. Public hearing is adjourned. Committee is adjourned.